Billy Collins recently stepped down as America's Poet Laureate. Throughout his tenure, he campaigned to make poetry more accessible, more widely read. It's not surprising, considering his own poems grab the reader with the very first line. Billy Collins recently stopped by our studio to talk about the art of writing a poem.
I like the poem to start by saying something that I think it would be possible to actually say to someone. Something you might say if you walk down to breakfast in the morning and you could sort of begin the poem by talking to this person. So I always try to begin with normal vocabulary. And
maybe this would be a good time to ask you for an example. Pick any poem you like to start with, but the first couple of lines you say would be something you might very well say to your wife at breakfast?
Well, possibly. I mean, this is a poem called, we're out of the breakfast area here, but this is a poem called Roadside Flowers. It has a U in the beginning, a kind of general U. These are the kind you are supposed to stop to look at, as I do this morning, but just long enough so as not to carry my non-stopping around with me all day, a big medicine ball of neglect and disregard. But now I seem to be carrying my not-stopping long enough ball as I walk around the circumference of myself and up and down the angles of the day. Roadside flowers, when I get back to my room, I will make it all up to you. I will lie on my stomach and write in a notebook how light-hearted you were, pink and white among the weeds, wild phlox perhaps, or at least a cousin of that family, a pretty one who comes to visit every summer for 2 weeks without her parents, she who unpacks her things upstairs while I am out on the lawn throwing a ball as high as I can, catching it almost every time in my two outstretched hands.
You've taken a very ordinary feeling, which is that we're all supposed to pay attention to the little things like the roadside flowers and run with it. There is that guilt because you know you drove straight to work this morning and out of the corner of your eye you saw those flowers. Yeah. And most of us...
You'll get back to them later. It really is taking off on that without saying it, that expression, don't forget to stop and smell the roses. And then I do run with it and I try to measure the guilt about how much stopping is necessary. So that becomes fairly absurd. And then I stumbled upon the word cousin, I think, and that just set the poem off in some other direction. And I'm always looking for something in the poem that I get distracted by. It really turns out not to be distraction. It turns out to be the new direction the poem wants to go in to escape its subject matter, more or less. So we start with roadside flowers and we end up with this kind of intriguing cousin unpacking her things.
I'm curious, I guess, at this point to know how you define poetry. And it's a huge subject, but poetry has always been defined, in my mind anyway, as minimal use of words for maximum imagery.
Mm-hmm. Another difference from prose is that prose generally asks you to stick with the topic. And in poetry, the idea really is to get away from the topic or to transcend the topic. There are so many definitions of poetry, but most of the classic ones I've noticed tend to have one thing in common. Like here are a couple of examples. Dante defines it as... poetry is things that are true expressed in words that are beautiful. Carlyle calls it musical thought. Hardy calls it emotion set to measure. Now, all of those definitions imply that poetry can do two things at the same time. It can be beautiful and true. It can be thoughtful and musical at the same time. And that poetry can do almost two contrary things at once.
You again do make these leaps from the ordinary to the sublime. Sublime may be going too far when it's the subject of throwing a ball up in the air, I don't know. But you do it quite often. There is another poem I was thinking of. Is it Litany?
There is one called Litany, yeah, which is, I think, well, kind of a takeoff on love poems, Elizabethan love poems, in which it was assumed that in the tradition of the love sonnet that you could make a great deal of headway with the beloved if you began vigorously comparing her to...
I compare thee to a summer's day?
Yeah.
Now, Litany does not do that, but it does take up that subject?
Well, Litany started when I read a poem by someone found it in a magazine, and it was one of these love poems that used comparisons. The whole poem was really just a set of comparisons. And he started out his poem this way. He says... to the beloved, he says, "You are the bread and the knife, the crystal goblet and the wine." And I thought I would write another version of that poem just incorporating his lines as a starting place and then seeing if I could push it in some new direction. Litany. You are the bread and the knife, the crystal goblet and the wine. You are the dew on the morning grass and the burning wheel of the sun. You are the white apron of the baker and the marsh bird suddenly in flight. However, you are not the wind in the orchard, the plums on the counter, or the house of cards. And you are certainly not the pine-scented air. There is no way you are the pine-scented air. It is possible that you are the fish under the bridge, maybe even the pigeon on the general's head, but you are not even close to being the field of cornflowers at dusk. And a quick look in the mirror will show that you are neither the boots in the corner nor the boat asleep in its boathouse. It might interest you to know, speaking of the plentiful imagery of the world, that I am the sound of rain on the roof. I also happen to be the shooting star, the evening paper blowing down an alley, and the basket of chestnuts on the kitchen table. I am also the moon in the trees and the blind woman's teacup. But don't worry, I am not the bread and the knife. You are still the bread and the knife. You will always be the bread and the knife, not to mention the crystal goblet and somehow the wine.
For those of you listening, I should say that not only does Mr. Collins deliver that in a deadpan, but his face is absolutely deadpan while reading those lines. But you broke into a grin immediately after getting to the end of
that. Well, there's a great deal of silliness, I think, and I'm really trying to... we've just been kind of confined by the tradition of the love poem, and I think some of my poems are, the poems of rebellion written by an English major who was, just exposed to so much poetry that I'm now having fun making fun of some of those conventions.
Does a poem like this roll off your tongue from one end to the other, or do you labor to get from one place to another in it?
I pretty much break through. I pretty much keep going until I get to the end.
Have you ever done a poem like this and found yourself in the middle with nowhere to go?
Yeah, lots of times. And I think I can kind of recognize even before the middle that the poem isn't going anywhere.
Can you come back later then and fill it out? Or is a poem that doesn't go anywhere a dead end that needs to be?
I never come back. You should see my wastebasket. Someone said the wastebasket is a writer's best friend. So if I have lots of false starts, poems that just don't seem to have anywhere to go or they lack momentum, there's no run of meaning, the associations aren't working. So I just generally pitch it as a bad attempt.
Has this changed in the years that you've been doing this? I thought about it because there's another poem you have called Royal Aristocrat. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about it as you talked about the wadded up poems that are in your wastebasket, because there's a line in there about using the old typewriter to iron out
right.
papers.
It's amazing to think that before the word processor that I would type up a poem and then I'd make a change and retype the whole poem. That's probably good for poetry or good for the writer because you have to recommit yourself to every word all over again.
If you wouldn't mind reading that, I think it's a nice reminder of where you were and where you are in a way.
It's amazing to think that it's like the names of old cars, but there was a typewriter called the Royal Aristocrat, which seems a little redundant. Because if you're an aristocrat, you're a royal aristocrat.
A poet can only use a royal. You'd never use an Underwood. Right?
That's right. At any rate, that's the title. It's a sort of elegy for the typewriter, Royal Aristocrat. My old typewriter used to make so much noise, I had to put a cushion of newspaper beneath it late at night so as not to wake the whole house. Even if I closed the study door and typed only a few words at a time, the best way to work anyway, the clatter of keys was still so loud that the gray and yellow bird would wince in its cage. Some nights I could even see the moon frowning down through the winter trees. That was 20 years ago. Yet, as I write this with my soft lead pencil, I can still hear that distinctive sound, like small arms fire across a border, one burst after another, as my wife turned in her sleep. I was a single monkey, trying to type the opening lines of my own Hamlet, often doing nothing more than ironing pieces of paper in the platen, then wrinkling them into balls to flick into the wicker basket. Still, at least I was making noise, adding to the great secretarial din, that chorus of clacking and bells, thousands of desks receding into the past. And that was more than can be said for the mute rooms of furniture, the speechless salt and pepper shakers, and the tall, silent hedges surrounding the house. Such deep silence on those nights, just the sound of my typing and a few stars singing a song their mother sang when they were mere babies in the sky.
Of course, this is you now remembering you writing then. But do you see a difference related to the shift in time in the way that your poetry emerges now?
Well, I guess it's developed to some degree. I used to write very short poems. This is not a very illuminating observation, but my poems have gotten longer. I've had a hard time getting beyond 8 or 9 lines. The poem would just kind of do a little turn. I think I was maybe trying a little too hard to be witty or epigrammatic. I could never get a second wind. So it took quite a while to write a poem where there are a number of sort of phases and stages that the poem goes through. So I often judge poems on the strength of whether they're providing me with an emotional or imaginative ride of some kind for going from one place to another.
Billy Collins, the former poet laureate of the United States, his latest collection of poems is called Nine Horses.